Hello and welcome to the Practical Tech Leadership Podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. In this show, I'll be chatting to C-level executives from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own career. If you like the show and want to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes or Spotify, or join us on Slack. Thank you and enjoy the show. Today's guest is Alex Eavis, the CEO at Dovetail Lab. Alex, thank you so much for taking the time.
My pleasure.
Fun talk. I'm looking forward to the conversation. We were just talking actually before the show. I've recently been revisiting my old roots down in kind of Old Street area, obviously where you are now, and we were just kind of reflecting on how incredibly uncool both of us feel in that particular area of London now. It's always a good way to start the show is, you know, admitting before we get started, I suppose.
Yeah, I feel very old. I won't tell you how old I am, but I am 10 years older than anybody else in my team. So, I definitely win the prize for uncool. My only sibling is also 10 years younger than me. The exciting things that you notice about millennials, or whether it's just whether it's all millennials or just my team, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. It certainly seems that way a little bit, but sometimes hard to tell. Certainly with the people with beards, how old exactly these people are. I think that's needless to say. But it's certainly an exciting area to be in, and probably gives you an opportunity to get your hands on some kind of great talent, which is obviously such a premium when you're, I suppose, the early stages of building a business.
Yeah, I mean, I think we benefit from working in health technology. It's quite a special area because we can make such a difference to both patients and clinicians' lives and ultimately save the NHS money and improve care. And I think that attracts younger and a different type of employee, especially when you're competing with, you know, the big banks and things in the city, and we can't compete on salary bands. But a lot of people now are choosing to take lower wages, I think, but work in an area that's more socially fulfilling. It's a super exciting time to be working in health technology. The government, and in particular the Secretary of State for Health, Matt Hancock, super supportive of digital transformation in healthcare, and there's lots of new technologies. We use blockchain, but lots of people bringing AI and machine learning and robotics and super exciting technologies and really making a difference.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's an interesting observation, I suppose, especially in, I guess, another point that we were making before we started the show is just how expensive it is in London. And obviously it must be extremely difficult of a decision to make for people to turn down, you know, perhaps a more lucrative area. You know, I think that I don't know, you would assume that would mean that the employees that are into the project that you're building are perhaps more motivated than, you know, they might otherwise be. Is that your kind of observation on that?
Yeah, I'd say a lot of feedback. Yes, I think so. A lot of people maybe have worked previously for say big banks or big telco companies, and then have decided that they want to do something a bit more socially rewarding or give something back. And yeah, I would definitely say that we have a sort of a very committed and diverse and extremely talented team. I think we also benefit from using and adopting very new sort of technologies like blockchain. That becomes very interesting for people in that they can learn new skills, and we've trained a lot of people up in coding in different languages. So it puts them in good stead for future careers as well.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, I guess there has to be that something of a value add, I suppose. The goodness of people's hearts takes it somewhere, but there always needs to be some kind of added, some incentive there as far as, you know, learning and development, which, interestingly enough, for some reason, although technology and is certainly a lucrative profession, that you do tend to see it, or at least my observation is that I've seen it from the people who have had on the podcast, that they're just equally as motivated by kind of learning new skills as they are about, you know, maybe earning slightly more, working in a business. And I think that's certainly my observation, but it's also, I think that's really cool.
Yeah, we've got quite a mixed team as well. So we've taken on some very, very junior developers, you know, with very limited experience, and trained them up. And that's massively rewarding, for, I think, for me personally, but also as a team. We have quite a transient, well, generally in London, I would say the tech scene has quite a transient working population. People move jobs a lot. And we've actually, since founding, I think only one person has moved on. So to me, that means we're doing something right. We've focused a lot on culture. And the one thing I've got better at as I've set up new businesses has been that focus on sort of team building and culture and personal development and growth. We do loads of stuff as a team that probably is over and above, I'd like to think is over and above what a lot of companies do. So we do a lot of team socials and outings. We take turns in cooking for the whole team once a month. And we do quite a lot of, I always send the team off on hackathons, which I think is great. We do the social ones. So the NHS has done some hackathons recently. We send the whole team out for a day, which is quite scary because you're paying them. And obviously that has an associated cost of losing your team for a day. But it's really, really good for team building, but also for exposure to the healthcare system and practice of, you know, really super rapid development and iteration. So far my team has a completely clean slate and has won all of the ones they've gone to. So they've set the bar very high for themselves. My expectations now on the next one will probably be unrealistic.
Amazing. Yeah, I like hackathons. I actually used to work in, I guess it was in health tech. I worked for Touch Surgery. I don't know if you know those guys. I think they're based in Old Street as well.
What do they do?
It's a surgery simulation app. I think they're in like AR and VR now as well.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Yeah, so we actually ran a hackathon when I was there, and that was a super interesting concept for just ideas. And it seems that there's a lot more of those kind of cropping up in the kind of health tech space, which is amazing, really. I suppose, you know, I think, you know, there's a lot of big visions going about, and, you know, if technology becomes this enabler, you know, that can really help support, you know, health, it's a great vision and a mission collectively that people are working towards. And it just seems to be, there's always a level, I suppose, of competitiveness in an area, but this also seems to be even more so than in general, a bit more of a collectiveness in the kind of the health tech space. You might have a different take since you're perhaps competing against others, but there certainly seems to be like a nice collectiveness. And I think perhaps it's because of the NHS, and there's always a lot of collaboration and, between them, and I think almost inevitably everyone has to collaborate with them at some point who's kind of partaking in health tech. And I don't know, from my perspective it just seems to be a great kind of cohesion and collective kind of vision that everyone's on.
The NHS is one of those things, isn't it? We call it our NHS, and it's something everybody associates with. Health affects everyone. And everybody feels very passionate about helping the NHS. So it's a great area around which to collaborate anyway. And also it's absolutely vital these days, it has been forever, but it's particularly, the focus is so much more now on user experience and usability and usefulness. And you just can't do that without clinicians in the room, without patients in the room, without the developers in the room, without the business people in the room, you know. And that's what a hackathon does. It brings all those people together, I think. And that's quite unique. We're definitely planning to organise one of our own as well, because we have we've built an API which allows patients to control access to their data and share their data, and we want to see how the developer community might utilise that and sort of what benefits that can be, because you don't know what you don't know, right? So, you know, we have some ideas of what we think it would be useful for and used for, but, you know, I'm sure when we get lots of people in a room, they'll come up with 1,000 different ideas that we hadn't thought about.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of benefit. Do you feel that you always kind of got bits out of it then, or at least your team's got bits from those hackathons and they've been able to kind of action certain elements of them?
Yeah, definitely. Certainly sort of collaborations and understanding, learning from the healthcare practitioners that and patients go to them has been great. And just being, I think, being part of the community. The prize is a little bit less so. I think they won a pair of pink socks last time and an Amazon voucher the time before. But it's not really, it's about taking part, right? The winning is, the winning is just, it's just nice that you come up with a good idea that people feel could solve a problem. I don't think anything's built in a hackathon that is production ready and sort of ready to go to be, you know, launched to market, but that's not really the point. It's getting those ideas created and those seeds and then taking them and running with them. But there's this sort of, healthcare's a tricky one because there's always this balance of, you know, rapid, agile, iterative software development in the tech world. And then in the healthcare world, there's sort of, it has to be evidence-based, it has to be, you know, past clinical safety tests, information governance tests, et cetera, et cetera. There's very high bars, and it's how those two worlds marry up, which is, I don't think in the past they have. In the future, they're learning how to work together, what are acceptable levels of risk, you know, with huge potential rewards. So it's definitely a really interesting time to be in health technology. Things are changing for the better, and it's nice to be involved in that.
Absolutely. So were you involved in health tech before you decided to build this startup? What's kind of the story behind it all?
So I had another business called Alcove, which I started in 2013, and that was more operating in the social care space. So we used sensors. We were probably one of the first companies to do it, to use sensor technology in the home to keep older and disabled adults in their own homes so they didn't have to move into care homes. So we could monitor and then send real-time alerts to carers or loved ones if something was out of the blue, or if somebody hadn't got up at a certain time that they normally got up, if they'd fallen over, if they were not eating, not opening the fridge, etc. And that was, we did quite a lot of work on preventing hospital readmissions, so sort of crossing health and social care, spanning the two, and that was where I sort of encountered the problem of, you know, no information was being shared at all between health and social care because they were different organisations. There are established methods for sharing data within the NHS that work to a greater or lesser extent, but there's virtually no basis or precedent for data sharing. Good data sharing between health and social care. And that kind of inspired me to think about, well, it's not just health and social care, there's lots of other devices and people involved in our healthcare now. So, you know, there's digital health apps, there's smart medical devices, there's private practices, there's charities, and how does the data between all of these flow? And at the moment, it really doesn't. So that was kind of the inspiration for setting up Dovetail, and a not small problem, quite a large problem. But, you know, we like big challenges to get our to get stuck into.
Yeah.
And that's going back to sort of, you know, tech for good. Technology seems to have developed in the areas the most, which, while it's great that, you know, I can order my food quicker, or I can, you know, I can turn my lights on with my mobile phone. You know, actually, technology hasn't done that much for the people that it could do the most for. So, and that's where I think the next level of advances come for. You know, in it's e-commerce and things like that. Great, it's made our lives easier, but actually, you know, it can do amazing things for the most vulnerable and disadvantaged people in society, and that's kind of what gets me out of bed in the morning.
Yeah. Was it kind of a career shift then to go into that? Was that what you were kind of, I suppose that was your trade, or were you, did you have kind of a different background before you started kind of building businesses?
Yeah, not really at all. So before that, I was doing corporate finance. Helping companies raise money and sort of listing them on the stock market and things. I think I've always been fascinated in the minutiae of people's businesses. Mm-hmm. So it definitely helped me understand how businesses worked. But I certainly haven't been running my own businesses forever. I did actually work for the NHS once. I worked for South West London and St George's Mental Health Trust, teaching prisoners in Wandsworth Prison. I was commissioned to set up a set of life skills courses to improve the mental health and well-being of prisoners when I was 22. So obviously I had a massive amount of life skills at 22. I taught anger management, relationship skills, and assertiveness and positive thinking. So I have some experience working in the NHS many, many years ago. I've gone full circle. Yeah. I did that. I turned to the dark side, worked in finance, and then went back to my roots.
Awesome. Well, it's interesting because you actually see that quite a lot. People coming from like similar kind of corporate finance backgrounds and then building something, not necessarily always in health tech, but then motivated to kind of build something. Is like a sense when you're in corporate finance that obviously you are kind of facilitating transactions, I suppose, but you feel like you want to kind of get stuck into the actual project. I've kind of heard that a few times. Did you kind of feel similar to that?
Yeah, and I know quite a lot of, poacher turned gamekeeper, is that the phrase? Lots of VCs or private equity professionals that have then ended up starting their own businesses. Yeah. I think that is probably true, that you know, you observe a lot of successful and unsuccessful businesses. So I think you probably learn what works and what doesn't, but also it's a different lifestyle. And it's not for everyone. Running your own business is quite stressful. There's a huge amount of responsibility, and there are good times and bad times. And I certainly in the early days, I was, you know, evangelizing to friends about who were employed about how they should start their own businesses, and a few of them listened to me, crazy fools, and some hated it and some loved it. You know, for some people, knowing where your wage check is coming at the end of every month is extremely important, and the, you know, being responsible to make sure that all your employees get paid at the end of every month is quite a burden in some ways, it's also a fantastic thing to see an idea turn into a business that's flying and the team are passionate about it and the product is great and people want to buy it, and it's doing what you set out for it to do. That's kind of special.
Yeah. Do you feel that you're getting kind of a greater sense of fulfillment from that aspect of, rather than, I don't know, I'm assuming you were quite well paid in corporate finance?
Yeah. Yes. For me, that's what really I want to achieve. So that's what really, you know, satisfies me, is seeing an idea come to fruition, and doing something doing something good. However,
no, it's right. I think it's right. I think if you're lucky enough, I think it's important to have maybe experienced both, to have maybe been in a position where perhaps you're kind of well paid. I mean, there are jobs out there, don't get me wrong, it's not like we one or the other, where people, I think people in tech are actually perhaps in that bracket where they get really well paid and they actually really enjoy what they do. So I think if you can do that, then why not? But I think if it's not necessarily directly in that position, it's something that you have to explore for yourself, certainly. So I think it's really interesting to hear your story actually about all this, because it is fascinating. And now obviously it's something that is essentially using kind of tech for good. And I did want to ask as well, obviously you're utilizing blockchain. How much of a transition was that to actually get a greater understanding about like blockchain in itself? Because I know there's a very small population of the country that could probably explain to anyone what blockchain is. I certainly don't think I can do it very well. So how did that kind of transition into actually going through what the feasible options were from a technical perspective, you know, from someone who isn't necessarily technical from the background perspective?
Yes. So, I mean, it came about, obviously, I was aware of the problem, and I am not technical. I had managed technical teams before, but I am not myself technical or technically literate. So I was actually, it came about because I have a friend who had a business, and it was probably one of the earliest businesses in the UK that was not only using blockchain for a sort of proof of concept or project, but actually rolling it out commercially. It's a company called Signatize. It does authorized signatory list management, which I'm sure the founders won't mind me saying is deeply dull and unsexy, but applies to pretty much every company above a certain size across the world. And talking to them about the technology, about the benefits of it, and that's where the discussion started, because it was clearly something that that should be considered as a possible solution. And then working with some of their colleagues, actually I ended up sort of poaching one of their colleagues on amicable terms, but Will, my co-founder, I stole him from them with their agreement, and you know, working from the problem, we would have built an append-only distributed database. That's a very fancy term, but essentially, all bar the shouting, that is a blockchain. So we would have built a blockchain had we been solving the problem from the ground up. So it just happens that there's a lot of existing blockchain infrastructure and platforms that already exist. So it was a bit of a no-brainer of why don't we use it. I think a big problem around blockchain and all the hype is that lots of people are using it where they could do it for half the price and in half the time using another technology. So it's very much, they're using it, you know, the solution looking for the problem. And I'd like to think we started at the right end and that we the solution matched the problem that we had. But I still spend probably 10 minutes of every 20-minute presentation I ever do doing my blockchain for dummies demonstration, which requires lots of animations and and moving slides. And yeah, I feel that if I can explain it and get it to sort of my level of understanding, then it works for other people. Whereas when Will talks about it, it's like, you know, because he's super smart, much smarter than me. I'm very good at hiring people cleverer than myself, but it's sometimes baffling.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, I'm just having this kind of mental image of you sat in front of a bunch of people from the NHS explaining what blockchain is and just getting loads of blank stares. But I'm sure that's of course not the case. No, NHS are profound professionals.
Yeah, you shouldn't need to explain it in many ways. That's the everybody's uh, everybody's being told that they should be using blockchain and nobody has any idea why. And actually, you know, you wouldn't tell anybody that you coded something in Java or Kotlin or you've used, you know, in any other description. You wouldn't tell your customer that. So you wouldn't tell them you've used a CouchDB database. It's a very unique sort of problem that blockchain has become sort of so infamous. And actually what I try to do is, well, I will try and, you know, do blockchain for dummies at my 101. Actually, generally with the customer, I tend to just explain the benefits because, you know, who cares how it works, right? You know, a clinician doesn't know that their electronic health record tool is, you know, is made, what technology that's made with. So why should anybody want to know really how blockchain works? It's totally unnecessary.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually. I don't think I've heard that it from that perspective before. But yeah, it's almost as though the allure of blockchain has gotten to the masses, really, isn't it? So that, like, even people who don't understand anything about technology, me probably being the prime example of that, are still very curious to hear, like, what it's all about. And it's almost like something, technology's kind of become cool, to the point where, you know, people want to be sat in Shoreditch Grind explaining what this new product that they're just about to use is, right? You know, like, it's unprecedented that this is kind of the case, but I'd never actually really thought about it before from, you know, a proposition perspective regarding, like, selling these kind of technologies. But yeah, I can imagine it being kind of a significant hindrance because, you know, the closest thing I've had really is, I suppose, we've had a lot of CDOs on the podcast previously, like chief data officers, that being, and they kind of explain, like, similar problems to where people are literally getting to the point where they're investing significantly into their businesses, into, like, data scientists, I think, typically at the time, when it's like, well, actually, like, a BA will probably do for you at this point, you know, but people have heard about data science and how sexy it is and this, that. And it's actually, I'm not saying that this is, like, a direct parallel to, obviously, the point that you were making, but what it is saying is that there seems to be a lure behind a lot of these, like roles or, like, interesting technologies, and people just want to hear about that almost for, because it's cool now, and it's an interesting problem, I suppose, it presents itself. One possibly being that it can waste people's time who are actually trying to sell the service or whatever.
Yeah, it's definitely hype. And it actually is, in our case, I think it's often sort of a deterrent or, you know, in some ways has a negative impact because you just confuse people, right? And people have a natural distrust of things they don't understand. So why confuse them and tell them things that they won't understand? It doesn't make any sense for everybody. All they need to know is what's in it for them. You know, how does this make my life easier or better or cheaper or more efficient? And that's the important thing. They don't need to know how technology works.
Yeah.
I'm still no clearer on black holes or antimatter, despite trying to read Stephen Hawking's books. But I exist in some form of reality.
At least you gave it a go. Yeah, some form of reality. I'm not going to go into that one because I'm and end up. That's kind of talk for the pub. That so we'll say that for another time, but. It's certainly a really interesting observation, and I think ultimately, like, it's like you say, it's simplifying the mission, you know, that Dovetail are on, really, right? Which is essentially better information sharing, right? At the base of it, and I think that's what's kind of important here is that, you know, it's a really interesting and compelling problem that we have still. It's essentially identifying and highlighting how we've massively kind of underutilized technology in the healthcare space. And, you know, it's amazing, but also really, really interesting that at least now we're getting, you know, dipping our toes in and getting things moving by the sounds of it.
Yeah. that the time is now, and things are changing. It won't necessarily be a quick journey. It's not going to happen overnight, but it has started. We won't be paperless by 2020, but the digital transformation is coming. But that's not a scary, like, we're trying to replace people. We're not trying to replace doctors with robots we're just trying to improve people's lives. So we're giving tools to clinicians to make their workload easier, or, you know, the tools to the patients so that they can own and control their data and use it to benefit themselves. I mean, and there's so many different use cases, but ultimately, the technology is there to help us as humans.
What's the most interesting? Are you looking at things on a kind of yearly basis now? How are you kind of monitoring and kind of setting yourself goals now moving forward, particularly with maybe Dovetail?
At Dovetail, we joined EMIS Group towards the end of last year. So we are now, we're now part of a much bigger team. And EMIS is one of the largest health technology companies in the UK. It processes 34 million patient records, I think, something like 50-60% of the market. And that's, you know, the power of the information that it sits on. If patients can use that, and clinicians can use that to improve patient outcomes, is huge. So certainly over the next few years, we're looking to work closely together, obviously, with EMIS and with a huge number of innovators in the health tech space, to kind of free up the power of that data and improve patient outcomes for all.
Awesome. It's been an absolute pleasure, Alex. Thank you so much for taking the time.
No problem. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time. Thank you.